The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
An Army veteran.
Duty, honor, country.
And former district attorney for Colorado's 18th Judicial District.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Most important, he's a father and a proud American.
Americans love a winner.
He is George Brockler. And this is The George Show on News Talk 710 KNUS.
I'm brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue.
We're back here on 710 KNUS, hour two of April 3rd's show. I'll be with you until 9 o'clock when Randy Liberty Esquire Corcoran will join us. We are going to be joined very shortly by Dan Kaplis, super lawyer in the metro area. You can't have listened to talk radio over the past, 20 years and not know who Dan is. Dan, of course, used to sit in this chair. He's now over at another station. But Dan has hit upon something. And again, I wrote a piece about something called Senate Bill 62. And in that piece, it was the bill that said, look, if you commit a bunch of business burglaries, car thefts, a whole bunch of lower level felonies, you get the equivalent of a speeding ticket. And that bill continued to progress through the legislature. And in that piece, I said, look, this is increasingly becoming the year of the offender. Dan, I think, has stumbled across something that makes it seem like the year of the offender on steroids. It's Senate Bill 182, and it's a bill that would, in essence, turn schools from crime-free environments into free crime environments. And so Dan sketched out a piece that the Denver Post was gracious enough to put on. And it, in fact, has made all the difference, in at least in terms of advancing the conversation to the next level. I can't tell you it's going to make a difference in terms of stopping the bill, because that's going to require one of two things. And frankly, the biggest person that could stop this is the governor. The governor could reach out to the leadership of the House and the Senate, and frankly, the bill sponsors, and say, if you don't fix the problems in this bill, I am going to veto it, because it is that extreme. And so one of the things that Senate Bill 182 does, and again, in defense of the drafters, their goal is to say, we don't think our schools ought to be pipelines to prison, which I think is a complete misnomer for what goes on in the state of Colorado. But they have their anecdotes, they have their examples, and most of their experiences come out of Denver and Aurora, although there are a handful of examples in other places. And they say, we want a bill that makes sure that we don't criminalize otherwise normal kid behavior. Unfortunately, they have drafted a bill that is so vast, so expansive, it doesn't just decriminalize otherwise normal behavior. It decriminalizes actual criminal behavior. And so this column is something that I think helps elevate this to the next level of discussion and hopefully gets the public to the place where they're starting to ping, either through texts, emails, whatever, showing up to the legislature to talk about this. And there's no one better to help this conversation move forward than the tip of the spear on this thing, the guy that's been carrying the water for it, the last couple weeks now. And that is my friend and my former boss, Dan Kaplis. Dan, thanks for joining us.
George, good morning. Privileged to be here.
Hey, thank you for taking time out of your Saturday morning. I would feel worse about it if I didn't know, just from past communications we've had, you seem to be up in like the 4 o'clock hour, already busy doing stuff anyway. Do you sleep until 5 on Saturdays?
Well, you only know that because you're up too. And obviously your listeners are, but it's the best time of the day, right?
You
can get a day's worth done in an hour.
Listen, have you checked out the website on the Denver Post? You know how they have the trending articles of the day and all that stuff? Your thing has been up there. Your column's been up there for less than 24 hours. It is the number two trending article on the
Really?
Denver Post. Oh, yeah. You
Wow.
got to go check
Well,
it out.
Well, thank you. That makes my day. I'm guessing I'm trending behind you and your piece yesterday.
No, not at all. Listen,
shootings, but.
I love writing for the Post, and they give me a great chance to write columns every other week and all this. But this one was something special, and I just started to tease the audience with the discussion of SB 182, which you've been talking about almost on a daily basis for the last couple of weeks. For folks that don't know what this devastating bill is, tell them a little bit about it.
Yeah, thanks, George. And you know, I think the reason the column would be doing well would have nothing to do with the way it's written, but simply the reality of it. Because when people hear about the reality of this Senate bill, the first thing they say is, "Nah, you know, that can't be true. You've got to be exaggerating because it is that awful." So here's the heart of it. You've got this bill. It's called Concerning School Discipline. But the heart of the bill is buried. It's 13 pages into the bill. And the heart of the bill is Section 6, titled Law Enforcement Authority. And what it does is it strips law enforcement, specifically, unequivocally, strips law enforcement of the ability to enforce the law in this specified group of crimes, in this wide range of categories. And then the flipping catch-all is the entire criminal code, Title 18, which you know better than anybody, having been such a great DA. But it says that all of the crimes in the criminal code, misdemeanor and below, cannot be enforced against students of the school for stuff they do at school, on a school bus, on a school trip, in school sports. And I hope folks don't think of misdemeanor as small, because, again, as you know better than anybody,
oh, man.
In the Colorado criminal code, you got a lot of big-time awful stuff that's misdemeanor. You know, a violent assault that comes under third-degree assault, and you've got, you know, often called sexual battery, unlawful sexual contact. You have really significant theft and property destruction, indecent exposure, and the list goes on from there. And finally, George, the thing I'd want to alert your listeners to is, you know, if there is what the law calls in its specific definition serious bodily injury, well, then the law still applies. But what folks have to realize is that you have a very high level of injury that can be inflicted under this terrible law without it rising to the level of broken bones and other, you know, type of very high level injury that's classified as serious bodily injury. So, you know, the quick example I like to use, my friend, as you know, is let's say you have a student in school and that student is angry with another student and attacks that student unprovoked, beats the student to a pulp. You know, the student's on the ground, pounds on the student, you know, then breaks the student's iPad, then slugs the teacher in the face, then sexually molests the teacher without penetration, then goes out and breaks the teacher's windshield. At that point, all of that cannot be touched by law enforcement. So it's that bad.
It is that bad. In fact, let me ask you something. I know you have the answer to this, too, but I presume they've limited this to folks under 18. So if you're an 18-year-old adult and a student at school, like many seniors are, of course, you'd still be bound by our law.
I love your provocative questions. No, as long as you are a student of the school. And that's a good question, George. I don't know what the oldest student is, but we all know there are a lot of 18-year-olds.
I was an 18-year-old senior.
Yeah. See, and because a lot of smart parents, you know, just realize that timing, you know, really gives kids a great advantage in life. And so we have more and more 18-year-old seniors. So, no, they are still immunized, essentially, from the entire criminal code, misdemeanor and below.
It feels like what they have done is, I remember about a year or so ago, they started to really push back on SROs in schools. And remember, Tay Anderson was part of this thing, we're going to pull the SROs out of the schools. I think they realized the pushback from parents was so extreme, they're like, okay, we'll leave the SROs in schools, but we're going to put them behind glass and say, break only in case of mass murder. And we're going to take away every other responsibility and, frankly, bit of authority that they have. That's how risky this bill is.
Well, great point. And I think the question is, and you know law enforcement so well, I do too, who would want to be an SRO when you have to stand there, essentially? I mean, who would want to be an SRO when your power to do justice is stripped and you literally cannot? This kid comes in and you've got this young disabled girl, this young trans girl, and some criminal comes in and sticks the hand under the blouse and sticks the hand down the pants, you know, and then punches her in the face and does all these horrible things, and the SRO can't even issue a ticket?
No.
I don't think you're going to have as many good men and women being willing to be SROs.
I think you're right. I think the other part is, and I'd be interested to know if you've been hearing offline from teachers, because I wonder where the union is. Because this, I want people to picture this. There's the kid that Dan describes, but there's the guy that shows up and is absolutely disruptive. And in fact, maybe picking on a kid in school because of their disability, their religion, their race, their whatever, their sexual orientation, it doesn't matter. None of that's a crime. The teacher says, you get out of my class right now. The rest of these kids want to learn. That kid says, screw you, teacher, spits in her face, maybe even puts hands on her and pushes her back. Not a single bit of that is addressable through the criminal justice system. It has to be treated like a discipline issue.
Exactly right. In fact, to extend the example, and I understand, thank God, this is currently much more likely, but once this becomes the wild, wild west and these crimes are all immunized, I don't think it'll take the bullies and the other criminals long to figure it out. In that same example, the assailant, the student assailant, could then chain the teacher to the chair, beat the teacher about the head and face, touch the teacher's private parts as long as there's no penetration, and go outside and break the teacher's windshield. And the SRO still couldn't give a ticket or arrest.
I think that people don't know, too, that there's such a thing as juvenile in possession of a handgun. That is a misdemeanor crime. So we're now talking about students with handguns on school grounds being treated as discipline issues. Dan, have you heard from teachers at all about, like, why would they agree to something that turns them into a defenseless referee of sorts?
George, I feel like a total failure on that because I've been begging for teacher calls, and it's total crickets. I don't think I've heard from a single teacher. And so, because, I mean, what are they going to say? And to me, it's a teacher union issue, because I've got to believe that the vast majority of teachers are as opposed to this as you and I are. But when it comes to union and power politics, the governor made clear this is a top priority of his. He praised this awful bill in the State of the State address and praised the sponsors. And so I think it's a power politics thing. I think the union heads are not willing to take on the governor and the left on this. And I think they're selling out the teachers the way they've been selling out the kids for decades.
My best guess is that right now in those conversations that you and I aren't privy to, that the governor, who signed on in his State of the State address, which you're right, to the idea of a bill that somehow ended the school to prison pipeline, is now hearing about these details, seeing your piece, having more and more people reach out to them. And my guess is he's reaching out to those drafters, those bill sponsors, and saying, what have you done? What have you signed me up for? Because I obviously didn't see the content of this bill. And I think you were right to point out in your show that you'd spoken with Leslie Herod, who I have a great deal of respect for. I mean, I disagree with so much of what she does, but she is a true champion for what she believes is true. So I love fighters, and she is. But I think you're right. I don't think she really had any idea how vast and broad this was when she offered it. Otherwise, I couldn't understand it.
Exactly. And I do believe, without a doubt, that whoever drafted it knew exactly what they were doing. Because, as you know, as one of the greatest legal minds I've ever known, as you know, the way it was so meticulously drafted to make sure that every single criminal offense, misdemeanor and below, would be immunized, whoever drafted it knew what they were doing. And the governor's office was involved in the drafting.
Oh, my goodness.
Listen, my hope is no matter who had what motive, who screwed up what, I just want them to fix it. I just want them to dump this. And as a practical matter, I don't think that happens unless, say, you know, your great listenership, people all over the state, across party lines, rise up above against this lunacy. Pardon me. I don't think it happens short of that.
Look, I'm anxious to want to push your column to number one on the trending list. So, I mean, everyone out there listening ought to go to DenverPost.com. It'll be so easy to find Dan's piece. But otherwise, just search Denver Post and Capless. This thing pops up. Read it first and then share it and then act on it. It can't just be one of the three. It's got to be all three in that order to do this to make a difference. One other piece about this, Dan, that really, really bothers me is this is a policy that a school district could have adopted in pulling out SROs or in saying, hey, we're just not going to have this go on in our schools. So DPS, Aurora Public Schools, they could have done this all by themselves. But I think they know that had they done that, parents would flee. Teachers might even flee because the extra pay and benefits isn't worth the risk to public health and safety. And so they would go somewhere else. This bill is now by its terms applicable to lotty-dotty everybody, every private school, every charter school, every public school. And that is one of the worst aspects of this is to say it's a one-size-fits-all approach. We don't care what Douglas County thinks. We don't care what Cherry Creek thinks. We don't care what Los Animas thinks. We here in Denver know the best way to protect your kids, and that is not at all.
What a great point. It gives the kids and the parents nowhere to flee to unless it's to private schools.
Homeschooling.
Which so many good people simply can't afford homeschools. But and then by virtue of that, what it disproportionately affects, you know, so many of these vulnerable kids and kids of color who are already, you know, disproportionately affected by the disruption in school from street gangs and others. I mean, it's just such a horrible thing to do to the kids, starting with the most vulnerable. And the teachers on top of that, my God, rise up, stand up for yourselves.
If they believed in it, and they also believe it. Remember, they get to destroy oil and gas and other industries by saying we want local control. So Boulder can say, look, we can't have any drilling. We can't do it. It's got local control is supreme. And on issues like this, they know that local control would result in people fleeing that sinking ship. It's just so devastating. And you should know, Dan, right now, texts blowing up here saying, thank you so much for having Dan in to talk about this. This is the worst thing in the world. All I can say is whatever wave you've caught, I hope you ride it all the way across on this thing, because this bill needs to be changed before it becomes law. And if not, I think this is a huge win for the governor, right? Like if this bill passes, as extreme as it is, this is a Governor Polis victory to say, I am vetoing this. This is too much, too far, too extreme for Colorado. That would make him look like a moderate superstar.
Brother, I know you are a champion meat eater, and in honor of meat in day, I am betting you the biggest steak in town that he does not veto this. Biggest steak in town.
As in its current form? Oh, boy. Okay, I'll take it.
No, no, okay. Biggest steak in town, and all the sides, too, because sides now cost as much as a steak. Biggest steak and sides.
In its current form, and I mean without substantial changes. If it changes one or two things, who cares? But I mean substantial changes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. He would sign it. He'd have a big ceremony. He'd you know, spike the football. Yeah.
It feels like a Shanahan's Elwazer or Del Frisco's kind of a bet.
Maybe all three. Maybe all three. There goes the college fund. But I'm telling you right now, this is the left's top priority because, come on, this goes beyond defund the police. You defund the police, you can still have volunteers. Here, they end the police. They end police enforcement. And once you have that precedent, of the governor and the left being able to say, okay, this group over here, for whatever reasons, you're no longer subject to our criminal law. What's next?
Oh, yeah. It's hard to imagine how far this thing can go. And when they spread it out to things like sporting events, you know, off-site things, outside the building kinds of things, the things that can take place in a parking lot, I worry about all of those kids that we have spent now a generation trying to protect from bullying, from the worst of the worst elements. Mm-hmm. And now we're basically saying, I guess the bullies win.
Well, and that's what I said to Representative Herod when she was so kind to sit down and talk with me, is you're creating a class of super bullies. And she said, no, I'm not. And that's when I was convinced that she did not understand what was in the bill, because I asked her to show me any language in the bill contradicting what I was saying, and she could not.
I think this bill, too, is as much as it may be well intended for those handful of cases that fit into this idea of this school to prison pipeline. I haven't heard them talk about any real numbers. And I think the last numbers that I had talked with someone about, we're talking about less than 1% of students out of the jillions we have in Colorado who have ever been subjected to the juvenile criminal justice system. So we're crafting a bill to expose the other 99% to the less than 1% who can't seem to figure it out.
Great point. That's why I think for a lot of people behind the bill, the intent of this is different. It's bigger and broader. But you're the expert, man. Tell me, Can't they address that concern through a sentencing provision rather than just saying, okay, this group bigger than Denver, Colorado, you're totally immune from our criminal laws, misdemeanor and below?
I think they could, but I have to say, I think there's a real mistake here that they're perpetuating. And that is the idea that the juvenile justice system is like the adult criminal justice system. And that is that kids make a mistake in school and somehow they're tarnished for the rest of their lives. That simply isn't true. As the jurisdiction that has the largest, most robust juvenile diversion program, a huge chunk of these first time, quote unquote, offenders never even get into court. Because we have this juvenile diversion program. Those who finally work their way to being adjudicated, you can't even be placed out of your home until you have three separate adjudications.
Wow.
That's a big deal. Or if you kill someone or attempt to kill someone, you're a violent juvenile offender. The ability to do something as a juvenile on a single mistake that would haunt you for the rest of your life is so incredibly difficult, Dan. My guess is it applies to less than 200 kids in the state of Colorado, maybe. I don't know the exact number, but you can't have a one-off mistake and have it haunt you forever unless somebody's dead.
What a great point, which brings me back to, I think for many on the left, the true motive behind this awful bill is much larger than even the terrible stuff that comes from, you know, the schools, that all of the additional crime and fear and tension and all the vulnerable kids, how much worse it's going to make it for them. I think there are even bigger motives than that for some of the people behind it.
I think it'll also give us a false impression of the crime that's taking place in schools because we're no longer going to have any reporting of it. We're not going to document any of it. And then they're going to show up in a year or two and say, look, it's been a huge success. We simply stopped looking to find it and it went away. Look at that. Isn't that awesome?
Great point. I'm having a guy on this week. He authored a book about the Parkland shooting, and that's his point, is wait a second, that shooter down there did all this nasty stuff at school. They never reported to make their numbers look better, but it robbed law enforcement of a chance to step in before the school got shot up.
Yeah, listen, I think this is also going to be a growing trend when you see teachers leaving, either retiring, going into another industry. I mean, you've seen, even through the pandemic now, you've seen some great school superintendents just pop smoke and say, that's it, I'm out. I mean, even Scott Siegfried, who's a personal friend from Cherry Creek School Districts, is like, that's it, I've had enough. I think they're getting out while the getting is good, because how in the world do you manage an educational environment where you have taken it from a crime-free environment to a free crime environment?
Well, I'm telling you, one of the people I'm really looking forward to hearing from on this is one of my favorite people. Our politics are way different, but Senator Fields. And I know that you have the great get and you're going to be talking to her. And I'm so interested to hear her on this because, again, we have different politics, but I just admire her so much for so many different things.
She is a true champion for victims, and we are going to have her in the 8 o'clock hour. Dan, thank you so much for giving us some of your time. Also, any last words you want to give folks other than they got to go out there, read this thing, share it with their email distribution list, and let's keep it moving forward.
Well, action. Please take action. And if you'd be kind enough, go to the Denver Post website, pull that column, email it, and text it to everybody. You know, this is one of those issues across party lines where as long as people know the facts, as long as they know this is happening, they will act. So please help this go viral and stop this awful bill.
Hey, congratulations on a great piece for a great cause, Dan. And thanks for giving us some of your time, man.
Appreciate your help.
Thanks, Dan. That was Dan Kaplis, big time attorney, big time radio host on another station. Used to be here. Great column. Go check it out. Look, when we come back, Ellie, you're on. If you hang on through the break, I promise to put you on. Ellie is a former teacher. She's got some comments on this. Anybody else that wants to chime in, especially if you're in education, and maybe you think we're way off our rockers, I don't know. 303-696-1971. I want to hear from you on this. What is going on in the legislature? Is this the kind of bill that would cause you to think twice about even, I'm saying this as a parent, to even stay here in Colorado if you knew that the law existed to protect the worst among us inside our schools? 303-696-1971. Until that time, George Brockley. This is The George Show. You're listening to 710 KNUS.
News Talk 710 KNUS. Listen live at radio.com. Now, back to The George Show with George Brockler on News Talk 710 KNUS.
We're back here on 710 KNU. It's George Brockler with you on The George Show. Going to get right to our fiery lines after hearing from Dan Kaplis about Senate Bill 182 and a great piece you ought to check out at the Denver Post. Ellie from Aurora, you're on The George Show. Ma'am, what do you think?
I have a lot to say, but I'll try to keep it a little bit short. I spent 27 years in what started out as a middle-class school, then became various gangs through my tenure there. And then when I left, there were some 60-some different languages spoken in that school.
Wow.
It was a middle school. And I left for two reasons. Well, sort of three. Time-consuming data collection was overwhelming. You couldn't discipline without having tons of computer data before you could ever send a kid to the office.
Wow.
I also left because there was so much administrative level controlling everything in the building. The money was going to high-level personnel rather than the classroom. And the number one reason was there was beginning to be no discipline in the classroom. They had taken out the SRO, and it was very difficult to deal with. Because
Ellie, how long ago was that they took the SRO out of the middle school?
Oh, I want to say 15 years because I quit teaching 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I finally stopped. I couldn't take it anymore, and I've been around a long time.
How long did you teach? 27 years, is that what you said?
In that school, and then I had taught before I had my children before that as well. But I stayed in that school because I loved the kids. But I tell you, it wasn't pretty. They would teach an anti-bullying class, and I could tell I didn't have to teach those classes except once. And I could tell when they had had those classes because my seventh grade boys would come in and try everything they'd been taught to watch for in others.
What?
Yes.
Really?
And
it was like a how-to, huh?
Yeah.
Ellie, had the SROs there, and I think this is the myth that's being perpetuated, I think, in some parts, and that is that the police are there to just arrest kids and drag them out of class and put them in cuffs and send them off to jail and ruin their lives forever. How often did you see police intervention in the middle school for behavior that rose to that level?
Mostly they were there when it was totally different when it first started, because they were allowed to be in the halls and they were interacting both in the community, because this was a tough community. There were gangs, all that stuff. And it was tough for them to deal with all these kids. But when they first started, the SRO was in the hallway and out on the playground and then also in the community. And by the time I left, there were no SROs, and they hadn't been allowed to be in the halls or anything like that. And the only time I ever really used one was when a kid stood over me in my classroom when I was in there all by myself. He had come back, and he stood over me, and I felt threatened by him.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And so I went down, asked the SRO to talk to him about it. Well, it turned out he had so many offenses before that they did charge him, and he held that against me for years. But I had no other choice, and it turned out he could not be in the discipline room in the school, nor could his father, without having a police officer present because of all the things that kid had done. Other than that, I just watched the SRO be very good. We had several different ones over time, and it was an excellent thing at that time when they started it, but they changed it to not being effective. They couldn't do anything.
Yeah. I don't think this bill's going to help. And Ellie, one of the things that I think gets lost in this is we have so much focus on the kids who run afoul of the rules and the law that we've lost sight of the fact that the vast majority, the 99% of the other students out there, are there to get an education, and this completely detracts from that.
That's right. And restorative justice, when they put that in for us to use, a kid would do something that, you know, you had dealt with, and you had to go through all these steps of talking to the, you had to gather the parents, you had to gather the kid, you had to gather the janitor. If it was anybody who was involved in the incident had to be gathered. And 7 days later, by the time you finally got all those people together, it was meaningless because there was no discipline happening in the school. And it just drove me crazy. And I finally said, I'm done. And I could have taught for 3 or 4 more years. I'm healthy. I'm strong. I love being there. And I finally said, too much administration, too much gang, too much this and that. I'm leaving.
Yeah. Ellie, thank you for this phone call. I imagine there's a bunch of teachers out there who are going to go through those same thoughts, if they haven't already, as we continue to turn these schools into places that are just much more at risk for them and the students and much less about education. Ellie's line is open at 303-696-1971. Going to Andy out of Denver. You're on the George Show. Andy, what do you think?
Hey, so I'm in law enforcement, and a lot of the people that I work with are SROs, and they've already handcuffed them as far as what they're allowed to do in schools, regardless whether or not this bill passes. They're kind of moving to like a restorative justice type model. But what's really scary is if this law does pass and there's no criminal charges for these kids, then even if that assault is going on, like what you and Dan were talking about, we're not going to have the legal authority to get involved with that because there's no criminal charges. So then what justification do I have to actually stop that? They've taken away
Andy, that's a great question.
For police officers.
I wonder if your agencies will take on the liability of telling you, hey, Andy, if something's going on between the teacher and a student, you should go intervene. Now, you can't do anything. You can't document it. You can't actually take them into custody.
Not.
That's what I think, too.
Because there's so much liability already for police officers to be in school. Our department specifically is already hesitant to send these guys back, even if they want them, because of the extra liability. And like you just said, there's a criminal assault going on that we have no legal authority to charge. There's no way that we're going to go get involved in that, because what if we hurt somebody in trying to stop that attack?
And your use of force, too, other than some sort of imminent self-defense or defense of others type thing. I mean, you would lack, by virtue of this statute, the reasonable suspicion or probable cause to believe that a crime has occurred. I mean, you could do nothing. I mean, it is putting you behind glass. And as I said in the last segment, break in case of mass murder. I mean, that's it. Just hang around, but don't do anything.
And what I really wanted to get to as well is, on top of this bill for the schools, there's another bill circulating around that says that we can't even arrest somebody unless they're committing an F3 or higher.
Oh, yeah. Senate Bill 62. Senate Bill 62.
Yeah, we're already doing this, and people don't realize that we're pulling people out of stolen cars and writing them a ticket right now, and they're blaming it on COVID, but this is ultimately what they want. And that's going to require, in order for us to actually jail somebody on some of those charges, we're going to have to come up with more legal justification. And in fact, it even ties judges' hands in saying that they must release some of these people once they appear in front of them.
Not only release
things
them, Andy, but if they fail to come to court, the court is obligated to consider giving them a PR bond and give them a PR bond until they miss 3 times. Can you imagine?
But to take it even further, that's 3 times on their case. You have no idea the amount of people right now that we are contacting that we cannot jail who have 4 or 5 different warrants.
That's right. You're absolutely right.
It is absolutely incredible the things that are going on right now. And people have got to know that elections truly have consequences, because this is 100% what we're dealing with right now.
It feels to me, too, Andy, like this is, and there have been a couple people on some of the other criminal justice laws that have gotten a couple other Republican votes that are a little bit different. But by and large, this has been a one-party effort to deconstruct our criminal justice system. They are going to own the crime rate moving forward. And maybe that doesn't matter to them, but it matters to me. Andy, keep up the good work out there. Thank you for what you do. Look, the phone lines keep getting jammed. Andy's line is now open for a second. 303-696-1971. Don, Frank, everybody else on hold. We'll get to you right after a break here. This is the George Show on 710 KNUS.
George Brockler, News Talk 710 KNUS.
It's on air here at 710 KNUS. George Brockler with the George Show. Phone lines still jammed. You call and try to fit in when you can. 303-696-1971. Let's go to Don in Colorado Springs. Don, what do you think?
You know, as somebody that went through the public education system, you know, I mean, of course, this is the left's obsession with trying to do with law enforcement and try to be a little more sympathetic to certain minority groups who act up. But the problem is that the left always sees the public school as some kind of social experiment with the teachers. Well, maybe not the teachers as much. But now they will be. The students are going to be. Have always been the lab rats while they, you know, they make their observations and go over things. And it's a sad affair.
I'm going to give the drafters the benefit of the doubt because many of them I know and I respect them, that they were really trying to tackle something that is a real issue for some kids in the community.
Well, it's that whole George Floyd thing that kind of put it on the front burner, you know. And I mean, they and their constituency wants them to do something about it. I mean, you know, and
it just feels like what we've done here is we've used a sledgehammer on an ant. Do you know what I mean? Like we've got a problem that could be addressed through very precise, specific language in a law if it needed to be that way. But instead, we've gone so broad, so big. And I'll tell you, my suspicion is this, that it got drafted by the American Crime Lovers Union. I mean, the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU.
Yes,
my guess is their fingerprints are all over this.
You know, and I mean, the ACLU will do anything to disrupt the social order and help collapse America and bring about this new Marxist age in America. And the ACLU is definitely on the forefront of wanting that.
They've got more input these days with the Democrat Party in terms of legislation being drafted than they've ever had before. In fact, largely they've moved away from becoming an advocacy group that helps defend, you know, the least popular amongst us in terms. And it didn't matter. I mean, there were times where you can remember looking back at, you know, the KKK and saying, my God, I can't believe the ACLU is representing them. But they did it because of some bigger.
They've
abandoned that, Don. They've abandoned that. They are now a lobbying organization for the left.
They've always been a lobbying organization for the left. It's just, you know, now that so much of what they've accomplished, you know, now they're coming out to showing us their true colors, and their true colors have been Marxists. And let's remind people that the KKK was created by the Democrats and progressives in their time.
I don't know about progressives, but I think the Democrat Party.
Well, the Democratic Party, but I mean,
that's,
you know,
the old party. Yeah.
I don't think they were ever conservative.
No, no. Although some conservatives certainly have gravitated to them for all the wrong reasons. But I'll say this:
exactly.
I think this bill can be saved, but it has to be overhauled. And the things I would recommend are either cutting it way back to cover those things that they truly worry about being the gateways to the system. Hang on real quick. Or they've got to make it localized, and they've got to allow local control to make these decisions so that we can see whether it works or it doesn't work. Go ahead, Don.
You know, and here's the danger, you know, when you got bullies, you know, I mean, the thing of it is when they start bullying people, that creates some bullies in the school, and then they become more aggressive and they try to push back. And, you know, for some, especially like me, when I pushed back, I got suspended and in trouble as much as these punks
that,
have.
That sounds like its own show, Don. Thank you, as always, for listening and calling in. I do wonder, and Don brings up a good point, I do wonder how much of this will lead to some sort of vigilanteism as we continue to, I guess, take away the authority of law enforcement and put them on their heels. I mean, obviously, it can't be this extreme. Does there need to be reform? Sure, but this is like overkill in terms of the reform. I mean, this is, hey, I've got a little dirt on my hands. Should I wash them off? No, you should set fire to them and cut them off. I mean, that's how it feels to me. But let's see what you guys think. 303-696-1971 from Denver. Frank, you're on 710 KNUS.
Hey, George, thanks for all you do, and thanks for bringing Dan in. It really lit him up. I've been listening to his show, too. Obviously, this type of solution is reflective of the inadequacy of a small group of people trying to make laws for all. I think your point about local control is really good. All these problems reflect a clash of cultures, problems in different elements of society, problems in family structure, and then problems in politicians trying to solve the problem. I felt really sad when I heard Ellie talk about this, because my mom was a teacher. She faced the same thing 30, 40 years ago. And it has not changed, but it's not fair to dump it on the teachers to help solve the problems of society that really should be solved elsewhere. And I really think it's bad when the party that seems to always have a D by their name makes these laws. You say you know them, and hopefully they're good people, and hopefully they have the power to change it to a better solution, because it borders on evil when they try to inject their ideas for societal change into laws like this that allow a scapegoating for certain people, which you say, and you may be right, maybe it's only 200 really bad kids, but like the cops say, they identify those people as the future criminals because they can't behave in the second grade. So it's a really bad situation we got, and hopefully Polis will either rein this in, veto it, or send it back for great modification with input from both sides.
Well, there's a huge stake riding on this for me, so obviously I'll be rooting for the governor to do the right thing. But, Frank, I'll say this. Every party, ours included, Republican Party, has folks in it that are not motivated by the best interests of their community. I don't feel that way about many of the sponsors of this bill. I don't know all the sponsors, but I know some of them, one of them including Senator Fields. I have no doubt in my mind that her interests in this bill extend to, I want to do what's best for the kids in my community. Now, whether or not our conversation leads to any other changes or anything, I don't know. But this bill isn't 100% bad. It's just the parts that are bad are so awful for the future in terms of, the worst of the worst kids out there and the impact they can have. My concern is, what if you're a parent and your kid comes home and says, I'm being bullied every single day. I'm being pushed to the ground. I'm being punched. I'm having my lunch money taken. None of these things would rise to the level of anything actionable. It'd all be quote unquote school discipline. What can you do? All you can do is go to the administration and have them go, well, we're kind of powerless to do anything about it. Can't involve law enforcement, can't offer them services that the juvenile justice system provides. We kind of just have to suck it up and move forward. What is going to happen to those parents who lack the ability to send their kids someplace else for education? And I wonder if we're going to start to slowly see an increase in homeschooling, because there's one place you can make sure, you can be sure your kids aren't getting bullied, and that's at home. You know, I just don't know what's next.
Pandemic, going back to home and learning that you can actually be to some degree effective. But what you're seeing is a failure of the system enhanced by legislators who are at least drafting laws, maybe not passing them yet, that would contribute to the failure of the system, which is no system at all.
I think it's I want to believe this. Look, these legislators are so overwhelmed with all the things that they're dealing with. To some extent, you end up trusting the people that bring you bills and draft them. You try to get through them. They tell you things. You trust them to tell you all the right stuff. And then at the end of the day, I think sometimes discussions like the ones we're having help to reveal to legislators, whoa, I did not anticipate this. I did not intend this outcome. We should go back and look at it. And I feel that same way about Representative Leslie Herod, who will come on the show. She's been on the show a couple times before, and I know she'll be on again maybe even next week to have a conversation. But I don't think her goal is to create an environment where kids are scared and teachers are scared and kids can't learn. I don't think that's their goal. I'm just not sure that they truly appreciate how broad this bill is.
So that comes from the input of a few who have other intent.
I think so. I mean, look, there's going to be some out there who just, like, again, I'm super skeptical right now of the current ACLU leadership in the state of Colorado. They have become a lobbying organization to advance nothing but progressive causes. They've stopped being the ACLU. They're not your dad's ACLU. That's what I'll say, Frank. They are an ACLU of a different, they're a lobbying organization now. They push around a ton of money to advance causes that have no interest of victims in mind. And another story for another show is they stopped using the term victims because it's just so charged. Now they call them survivors of crime.
So, thanks for shining the light on it.
Yeah, thanks, Frank. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. It's always good to hear from you. Great calls. Hey, listen, when we come back, we're going to be joined by Senator Rhonda Fields, going to talk to us about some bills. True champion for victims. And there are some things going on in the legislature right now that make it super challenging to really advance the ball for victims. And I think it may actually increase some victims. And then I know Senator Fields, we'll have a conversation about some of the other bills that are out there, including this one that she's a sponsor of. So stay tuned. Until that time, my name is George Brockler. This is The George Show. You're listening to 710 KNUS.